Welcome to the Decent Rowing Podcast. My name's Lachlan. I'm here with my dad, Ken, and together we have decentrowing.com, where we share quick and easy videos so everyone can row better. So today we're going to be talking all about masters and coaching masters, what it's like being a masters athlete, and a couple of things to think about, because it's not quite as simple as junior competitive racing. There's a lot more things that crop up, and the way you go about teaching can be slightly different. So Ken, where would you start when you're thinking about training masters to improve their technique?
I think the first thing is to understand the type of master that you're talking about. There's a whole range of masters. If we focus first on the masters that haven't rowed before, then essentially they're just being taught how to row from the beginning, and so a beginner's rowing course is ideal for those sort of masters. There are a few differences because of most masters have a different way of learning than perhaps young children, but we can talk about that another time. The second class is the athletes, the masters athletes that used to row at school or rowed a club, and they've just kept rowing ever since. And some of these masters athletes, when they were rowing before, were taught a completely different style to what we row with these days. The equipment was different. When I was rowing at school, we put grease on the gates and we had wooden oars. It's a totally different sort of a sport, and the way we rowed with technique was quite different as well, and that's all changed. And the third category is similar to that one I just talked about, but they're masters that don't really want to race. So there's two classes here, essentially. There's athletes, masters athletes that want to race, and they have a different focus in their sport. And there's another group of athletes that really don't race much at all, or indeed not at all, and they just row to have fun. So they go out for a row with their friends for exercise, and they just enjoy being out on the water. And there's different techniques for them, and it's important that coaches and athletes understand the differences, particularly for those athletes that don't really want to be out there and be super competitive in a racing environment. Now, Lachlan, you've talked before quite a bit about how do you set a boat so that it just makes you have a good time when you go for a row. So what's your particular take on masters athletes, the difference between those that want to race and those that just want to row?
So I think it's a part of a bigger picture with rowing. I've always seen rowing has been two sports, essentially. You've got one where you've got competitive races, and you've got one where they just want to go for either like a social row, or in my case, just a steady state row, just really focusing on technique and enjoying my time out on the water. I've done plenty of racing in my time, and the way you set up your boat for racing is a lot different than if you were just setting it up for a casual row. Also, the way you train is a lot different. So if you're focusing on racing, you really need to incorporate a lot of high intensity things into your training program. You need to rig your boat so it performs very well at race pace at a higher rating, and not so much at a lower rating. And so the way you set a boat up varies a lot as well, not to mention, you know, what training program you follow, or if you follow one indeed. So yeah, when you're setting a boat up to be just for cruising as opposed to racing, you can get away with things that you can't when you're racing. So for example, I'll have my oars quite long, a lot longer than my fitness would represent at this time. So I'd have my oars on probably 288.5 inboard, which is really quite heavy, and you could expect someone at a World Cup level to be using that in their race. But because I'm not racing, it allows me to have a very long catch and a very easy catch. So I quite like having that set up for rowing slowly. Well, yeah, slowly at a lower intensity, say rating of 14 to 18 strokes a minute. So still a good aerobic load, but nothing really racy. And if I was to try and race on those settings, those oar settings and that gearing, I'd probably blow up within 250 meters. It wouldn't be good, but it's extremely comfortable for rowing steady state.
And from a gearing type perspective and the catch, often we'd find that particularly some masters tend to row a bit short because their bodies are larger than an adolescent, and so they tend to row a little bit short. And one of the issues with rowing short is that if you row short at the catch, then you'll find that it's harder to get a good catch. And so it's if you're having a row like Lachlan's talking about, then changing the position of the foot stretch is really important to have an enjoyable row. So Lachlan, you've fiddled around with changing the foot stretcher in order to make it easier. So how do you view that particular aspect, especially as lots of masters rowers don't have the flexibility that the younger athletes do?
Yeah, so essentially moving the foot stretcher as far as you can towards the stern, with still maintaining a relatively comfortable finish position. So you don't want it to be so jammed up in your body, you're too far towards the stern. You want it to be comfortable, but I'd have it on the side of this is the absolute maximum I can come forward into the bow and still, or the minimum I can come forward into the bow and still have a comfortable stroke. And then I'd set my foot stretcher a long way towards the catch. And because the blade gets, you have such a huge catch angle, then it's very easy to get the blade in. And especially if you're not quite as flexible, sometimes it can be good. Like, for example, when I haven't been rowing for a while and I have like a bit of a gut, it's a lot harder for me to get into that catch position. And so I'll be doing everything I can to make sure I still have a good catch. So I'm thinking about increasing my feet to seat height. I'm thinking about moving my foot stretcher towards the stern as far as possible. And so really trying to use rigging to my advantage so I can still have a very large catch angle, which means I'll have a very comfortable catch placement, which means I can get locked onto the water easier, especially at a low rate. And if I'm not racing, having that huge catch angle is just going to make my row a lot more enjoyable. Whereas if I was trying to tune my boat for racing, doing all those steps and having a massive catch angle, yeah, it's great. If you've got a huge engine, you've done a heap of training, you're an elite rower, that's fine. You can have a great race like that. But if you're someone who's in my situation and I try and race on that huge catch angle, yeah, I'll still be able to get my catch in easily, but my arc is going to be so large and my power is going to be so down that I won't be able to maintain that for very long in the race, and it'll be very unpleasant. So yeah, it's one of those things where I'm at the moment, I've got my boat set so it's a really comfortable low rating, fast, smooth, easy at a low rating, and absolutely not tuned in any way for racing at this stage.
So I think it's really important for every athlete and coach to understand the differences. And one of the most important things in rowing is that the athlete needs to be comfortable in the boat. Now, quite often you'll find with masters rowing, there's a lot of crew boats. There's some enthusiasts that head out in a single scull quite a bit, but there tend to be quite a lot of crew boats as well. And because of the way that people develop, you'll find that masters are quite different in their body shape than you might find if you were coaching, for example, grade senior school students, where you'd get not so much variability. And it's so important to make sure that every athlete's comfortable in the boat. There's nothing worse for an athlete when you find that you just can't fit. And Lachlan, you've had positions in the past when your feet to seat height, for example, would be not suitable for you. And what does it do for your rowing?
So for me, I know that if I don't have at least 20 centimetres at the moment, because I'm a little bit less flexible than I have been, or it's probably more like 22 to 24 centimetres feet to seat drop. And I know I need that to be able to have a comfortable row. And at a low rating and a high rating, it's the same thing. I don't have different positions for different ratings. I just know that if I was in a race and I had, say, 16 centimetres feet to seat, I'd only be rowing three-quarter slide, and my flexibility is so poor that I just wouldn't be able to contribute to boat speed the way that someone could if they were rowing a full-length stroke. And it's the same with rowing at a low rate. There's even less momentum to try and take you into that catch position at a low rate. So you need to be you have to be even more comfortable at a low rate to get a good length than you do at a high rate. But yeah, for me, if I can't get that feet to seat height, I just know it's not worth me going for a row. It'll just be terrible. And so it's one of those things that you really have to learn to know your measurements and know what to look for. And enough bad rows in a row will do that for you. But it's especially hard if you've got a whole heap of people who aren't very fluent in rigging a boat, and they don't really know what they need to do. They're just going to get in a boat, and some boats will feel comfy, some boats will not feel comfy. And for me, it's almost the same as making sure your feet fit in the shoes. It's that important to make sure that I can get into a good catch position. It's like, it'd be like me going for a row in shoes that are three sizes too small for me. It's that unpleasant for me. And I think it's that unpleasant for people that are in the same situation. But you have to, as a coach or an athlete, you have to take responsibility for making sure everyone in your crew is comfortable. And this can, and with Masters athletes, not all the time, but they're typically less flexible than their younger counterparts. And so it becomes even more important that you check to see if they can get into a comfortable catch position when you put them in the boat.
Absolutely. And so I think following on from that, it's super important that everyone is educated to what is comfortable, what changes they can make to a boat, and in order to be able to make everyone have a good row. Generally, masters are rowing because they enjoy it, and if they start to not enjoy it because they're being forced into boats that don't fit, then either because of their own inaction in changing things, because they just don't understand, or because that's what they're required to do because of the equipment the club's got, then you'll find that athletes won't continue rowing for that long. So really important everyone understands how to do that. A couple of tips that are important for coaches and clubs to understand in making this work well for the club is, if you've got in the larger boats, I'd suggest have certain seats in the boat set so that they cater for different size, different flexibility athletes. And so, for example, if you're rowing an eight or a quad, then look at the crews that are most likely to use those boats, and then try and rig the boat so that there's a few seats in there that have got big shoes, for example, that have got small shoes, that have got a large seat to feet distance, and some that are less. And then make the athletes understand, or let them understand, what particular seats suit what particular people, and they'll work it out pretty quickly. And so long as no one's too hung up on where they sit in a boat, then you'll find it's going to be a lot easier to have a good row, because everyone will be able to find a seat that fits. And so just think about those sorts of aspects before you put the crews into the boat to try and make sure that it's really comfortable for everybody. And I think you'll find you get much better outcomes with that. Now, with the racing side of things, if you're going to race a lot, then you'll probably find that you want to try and match the athletes so that those that want to race are matched with those athletes that just want to have a gentle row. Tends to avoid a bit of friction in the boat. Lachlan, have you haven't rowed in a lot of masters boats, but you would have rowed in a number of club boats where there were different levels of expectation from the athletes. And how does that play out when you get into a competitive environment?
Typically, it sucks. I've been in plenty of crew boats and competitive crew boats. Like, you might even have, for example, I was in this eight a few years ago, and we were the fastest eight. We ended up winning the state championship. Great. But the expectation was that we'd win by a huge margin, not just enough, but a huge margin. So if we even came close to coming second in a race, the mood of the whole boat was sour. Even the only time I think the crew was happy was when we won the state championship, and that was great because that was the end of the racing season. We didn't have to focus on the next time. Whereas there's just sometimes you get really high expectation people in a crew, and obviously I was in that crew because I wanted to win as well. But some people just make it completely unenjoyable for the rest of the crew, and that's just part of competitive sports, I guess. But it's one of the main reasons I tend to steer away from competitive racing these days. Is, you know, I've had my fill of winning, and also having to put up with, you know, those sort of personalities in the boat. And there's nothing worse for me if you go for a row. You know, it's pretty good. There's a few things to work on, and someone in the crew just thinks it's the end of the world, and it really just grates against what you're doing. And likewise, it's harder for me to get into a social club boat, because I also have the same an expectation that I want to have a good row. And it's why I end up rowing my single quite a lot, is because having a mixture of proficient rowers, good rowers, and also not having the burden of trying to make the row perfect, trying to get things to be as good as they've ever been, that can be difficult. And so I think, generally speaking, if you're trying to get people into the sport and try and keep them in the sport, a sense of enjoyment is important first. For some people, that's racing, and doing well in racing is an important component of that. But yeah, it's important, like Ken said, to match up the different crews as best as you can, and be conscious that good rowers aren't always going to want to row with novices, and novice rowers aren't always going to want to row with good rowers, because they'll feel like they're failing the whole time. So putting people that are a similar, if you can, putting people who are similar ability in the same boats is very useful, and that goes across all different classes of boats, all different age groups and abilities. But yeah, it's a fine balance of how to make a crew work well. I think the key is probably just to, yeah, for me anyway, it's to keep focusing on things, but don't let it just ruin the rest of the day or everyone else's day if you can't manage to get that small piece right in the rowing technique.
Yeah, the other thing that comes out of that too is that there are a number of different rowing techniques, particularly for masters rowers that have rowed for a long time and were taught a long time ago and have kept the same technique. And what we find is that if you're coaching a group of masters and they've got different techniques amongst the crew, then that can create just as much friction as well. And they might all be trying as hard as they can and trying to fit in and trying to do the right level of workload, etc. But you may find they've got a technique differences that need to be resolved. A good example of this we found in Australia over recent years, there was a fashion in the technique of, in particularly in eights, men's eights, would be to pause at the finish. And so they'd tap out and then they'd pause and then they'd come down the slide, generally pull the boat towards them quite quickly coming down the slide if they were racing. So it was a pretty valid technique. I don't see a problem with it. But the issue that arose when you'd have different athletes who wanted to pause and different athletes that didn't want to pause, then it just created unnecessary friction in the boat. And so before you get on the water, you need to sort that out. One athlete I was coaching, she said that she'd get into a boat and some were pausing and some were not pausing. And the solution was actually pretty easy, was when you get into the boat is to find out what the boat's doing. And if everyone wants to pause at the finish, we'll all pause at the finish. If everyone doesn't want to, then, or if most don't, a majority rule type thing, then you just adapt the technique in order to be able to make it fit. Having said that, it's pretty hard to adapt your technique to fit if it's not what you were taught. And Lachlan, you were lucky enough to row through that period in Australian history here. So what's your take on trying to get the same technique across the boat, not just pausing at the finish, but how do you take the catch, how quickly you come down the slide, all those sorts of aspects?
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of habits that we get in rowing. You learn a certain technique and, you know, you try and make it good, and then if you get something that's a lot different, it takes there's a bit of transition period trying to make it work. Your brain wires a lot of connections quite solidly, and so the longer you've been doing it, the harder it is to change. But you know, I guess you just have to do what you can to try and make it work, and it comes up with all sorts of different things, including like who prefers different sets of oars. Like once you've been rowing for a while, some people prefer Concept 2 oars, some people prefer Croker oars, and they do feel quite different when you're rowing with them. So the more different equipment that you can use and the less you can get hung up on these things, the better, in my opinion. So if you can row well with Croker oars, you can row well with Concept 2 oars, you can row well on bow side, you can row well on stroke side, you can scull well. It's all important for being a resilient rowing athlete and being able to be proficient in all these things. Whereas if you get hung up on certain things, you can run into a bit of trouble. And for me, like I said, if I get hung up on the fact that I can't drop my feet far enough, I just would rather not go for a row. But that's important to me, and some people are the same with rowing on stroke side or bow side. But yeah, one thing I'd recommend, any crew boats that you have, so boats where lots of people are going to be using it, try and work out some measurements. So if there's like three sets of people that row in a crew boat, try and set it up and put like a little bit of tape, a little marker where you sit, where you're comfortable, because there's nothing worse than going for a row in a new boat. And it's not, you've rowed the boat before, but someone's changed all the settings since you last rowed it, and you don't really know where to start from. So you do the warm-up, you move your feet a little bit, you do a bit more of the warm-up, maybe the first part of the session, and you're like, oh, well, I need to put my feet down, or maybe I need to change the angle or something like this. And so if you've got a boat that's got quick release foot stretches, you can move the height, you can change bits and pieces quite easily, then that's ideal. Obviously, anyone who's been rowing for a number of years probably realizes the downsides of these quick release systems. They're often not as durable, and they'll start to break and fail a lot more than, say, a nut and bolt would when you're moving it, but you can at least move them quickly and get into a good position. So yeah, it's a bit of a trade-off between how quickly and easily you can move something and how durable it is and how it stays in place over time. But yeah, generally speaking, I reckon the more quick release, quick moving things that you can incorporate into a boat that's used by multiple athletes, the more enjoyable those crew boats will be, and the more likely people will be to want to race in them and train in them, as opposed to just getting stuck in their single, which is where I am mostly.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And when I sort of summarise what we've been talking about, the critical thing I think in coaching a master's crew is to understand the people, the athletes that you're coaching, understand what type of technique they have, what sort of physical strengths and limitations they might have, and how you can massage that together. And a critical part of that is having good conversations with all the athletes and the coach. So you want to make sure that the people aren't bottling stuff up and getting grumpy and unhappy simply because something's not to their liking. Whereas if it was talked about and put out openly, then you can fix all sorts of issues. Who sits where in the boat, what the equipment settings are, why such and such likes to row in the sixth seat in the eight, and it may well simply be that that's the one where the foot stretcher positions suits them, or the foot size, shoe size fits them. So understanding all of the crew, all of the athletes in the crew, is really important, and then having good conversations between everyone involved so that people understand what particular technique that the crew is adopting, and if people need to change, how to educate them on how to change. So there's a whole list of things that we can talk about, but we don't have time today, but we'll do it another time. Things like, if you want to teach someone how to pause at the finish and they've never done it before, but most of the crew want to do that, then there's techniques to learn to do that, and there's advantages in doing that and disadvantages. So it's about understanding all that, and if the crew members individually and collectively understand what the issues are and can arrive at a position where they're all comfortable with that, then you'll find you get much better performance. If you've got people that want to come pull the boat towards them aggressively coming into the catch, and you've got other people that don't, then that's unpleasant for them. If you've got some athletes have a really large catch angle and some athletes don't, then you'll find all sorts of issues come out of that. So it's really important to have good conversations with all of the people involved and arrive at a position where in any particular crew boat that the boat will row, everyone can row as well as they can together to make the boat go faster and have a much more fun row. So I think communication's the issue, and sometimes people don't talk about it enough and don't arrive at a consensus position, and therefore people have a bad row. So I think the critical thing really is to understand the athletes, understand their strengths and their limitations, and understand the equipment, strengths and limitations again, and then massage that so that you get a good row for everybody.
So I've got a heap of videos on our website talking about all the different positions you can put the boat in and what what rigs suit different athletes. So all the way from juniors, all the way up to elite and masters, both from a relaxed rowing point of view and a more elite racing point of view. So if you're a member, you can head over to our website, decentrowing.com, and all of the videos there are available for you. If you're interested in learning a bit more about rowing and you want to have a look at our free rowing course, that's also decentrowing.com. You just have to put your email in and we'll send you to that page. So until next time, happy rowing.